It is straight up at 8 o'clock. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of the Mornings with Ed Show. Delighted to have you here on a beautiful day. This coming Thursday, the World Affairs Council of Orange County is hosting a conversation, U.S. Immigration Trends, the Realities and Choices. It's at the Avenue of the Arts in Costa Mesa at 3350 Avenue of the Arts. Tickets are available. You can call me here. I'll be happy to dial you into where to go for tickets. Just in case, go to www.worldaffairscouncil.org/events. And I also have their phone number here. Several speakers. There'll be Greg Burke. There'll be Dr. Louis DeCipio and this gentleman here. Mr. Alan Burson is the former commissioner of Customs and Border Control. Mr. Burson served as the commissioner of Customs and Border Control from 2010 to 2011. Overseeing about 57,000 employees in that workforce and managed an operating budget of more than $11 million. He's also formerly served as the Department of Homeland Security Assistant Secretary for International Affairs and is a special representative for Border Affairs, which we informally known as the Border Czar. We welcome in for the conversation this morning, Mr. Alan Burson. Thank you for being here this morning, Mr. Burson.
Good morning, Ed. Happy to join you.
Well, happy to have you here. I thank you so much for your time in this very important conversation we're about to have. And when I mentioned that you oversaw 57,000 employees in that workforce of the Customs and Border Control with a budget of $11 million, that budget itself, the $11 million, sounds a little thin when I think that Governor DeSantis in Florida has spent $12 million to send migrants all over the country. Is $11 million enough for a Customs and Border Control budget?
Actually, Ed, we two corrections. One is that it Customs and Border Protection, which was formed after 9/11 with the reorganization of government following that traumatic event, and the budget actually was $11 billion at that time, and it's grown since then. So we're talking about real resources. In fact, U.S. Customs and Border Protection is and remains the largest law enforcement agency in the United States.
So I'm a victim of a typo here then, apparently.
I guess so.
Okay. So as we see it today, as we're hearing reports this weekend, migrant deaths are increasing at the border. Crossings, though, are still at an all-time high, with Border Patrol reporting 1.8 million apprehensions from October of 2021 through July of this year. That's more than double the 860,000 that were reported during that same time frame in 2018 and 2019. We're seeing that morgues and border towns are running out of space. How did we get here? How did this border, and some are calling it a crisis on our southern border, how did this happen?
Well, this, in fact, will be the controlling event, perhaps figuring in the midterm elections, to be sure. What's really happened in the last two administrations is that we moved from a very restrictive, even harsh approach adopted during the Trump administration to the entirely different approach that's been instituted by the Biden administration. But this is a history that goes back to the 1990s. And part of the, I think, interest to your listeners and to the participants in the World Affairs Council event scheduled for Thursday is that we've fluctuated back and forth pendulum-like from one extreme now to the other. And what we need to find, in my view, is the middle approach that balances enforcement and deterrence, but with humanitarian dimensions that were absent during the Trump administration and actually are key to the kind of immigration policy and situation that I believe the American people want.
Would you consider the previous administration's approach to be draconian?
No question that it was. In fact, for the first two and a half years of the Trump administration, we had levels of migration that far exceeded that which was in place at the end of the Obama administration. But then beginning in 2019, 2020, with the pandemic, we saw the institution of Title 42, which blocked all migration into the United States, and other techniques that led to the kind of decrease that we saw. When the Biden administration arrived, it sought to reverse many of these draconian approaches as inconsistent with American tradition and law. But they still have struggled to find that middle approach that would balance deterrence, which is required, but also with humanitarian treatment of migrants.
Okay. And we talked, I want to stay on the draconian track for just a moment. We talked about Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Texas Governor Greg Abbott. They're shipping migrants off to blue states in what many consider a political stunt, a cynical political stunt. Other than moral outrage, which a lot of our listeners call in daily to express, what can the federal government do and what should they do?
The federal government, actually, from the 1990s through 2017, actually put in place a situation that brought the U.S. Southwest border, California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas under a control that was, I thought, the best approach. We saw at the end of the Obama administration the lowest inflow of migrants on an irregular, illegal basis that we had seen since the 1990s. And that kind of policy, in fact, is the one that I think we ought to be pursuing now. It's a totally different situation, though, Greg, from Ed, from what we saw in earlier times. What migrants are doing now, facilitated by smugglers, is actually not trying to avoid Border Patrol agents at the border, but rather seeking to find them so that they can assert asylum claims, which, because of the broken asylum system, permits them to enter the United States to wait for an immigration court hearing that, on account of the backlog in the immigration courts, is often scheduled 2, 3, and 4 years from their time of entry. This is part of the larger issue that we face in the United States today, which is a broken immigration system, particularly in the asylum area, which has led to a border that appears to many to be out of control.
Right. How do and the asylum situation in particular I know it's not a quick or easy fix, and I know that this answer is certainly not a quick or easy answer, but fixing the asylum system, that has to happen first, correct?
We have to fix it, and the administration, the Biden administration, is attempting to introduce reforms, but at the end of the day, as required by the Constitution, this requires congressional action to overhaul the system, Ed. And because of the political paralysis in our country currently, that is not doable, and the consequences therefore remain.
Okay. I'm going to float a theory by you, and I want you to tell me if I'm crazy or not here. But President Biden last week kept the nation's cap on refugee admissions at 125,000 for the 2023 budget year, despite receiving pressure from some to raise it even higher to meet the need of net migration that we need as a country. We actually need migrants, is the point I'm trying to make. It's down nearly at an all-time low. In 2020, we were at about 700,000 migrants. We peaked at just over 1 million in 2016, right before Donald Trump was elected. And it's plummeted to about 247,000 since we've groped to try and find ways to shut the border. The national labor force reports numbers from February of 2020 that was at 63.4%. That's now down to 62.4%, and that's just a 1% drop. But that 1%, I made the case earlier, is over 2 million workers. And that shortened labor participation rate has meant increased wages and tight labor market and messed up supply chains. and also inflation, not to mention the fact it affects Social Security. What should that number, where's the sweet spot for the number of migrants per year that we should allow in?
So, Ed, not crazy at all, but actually spot on. But we have to distinguish between lawful migration and irregular migration. The lawful migration, having legal pathways for people to enter this country and take their role, actually has been critical to American history. Our society is a society over time of immigrants. Immigrants have built this country, and as you point out, our labor market continues to require people with low skills as well as particularly at the high end of skill levels. We need to find that balance and increase the capacity of the system to recruit and attract migrants to join the labor market. But we can do so by creating legal pathways that are another part of the immigration reform that's sorely needed. But you're actually, of course, right. We are a society of immigrants, and the continued health of our economy requires a labor market that is able to attract people to meet the needs of the society. That will require the comprehensive immigration reform that's eluded us because of the polarization and paralysis that currently afflicts our politics. But there's no question, distinguish between legal migration, which is sorely needed, and irregular migration, which needs to be deterred without sacrificing the role of asylum, which is a traditional part of our policy, and welcoming refugees, that also is a part of the society. But we have to keep these two different varieties of immigration clearly in mind.
Okay. When we saw what we witnessed 5 years ago with the separation of children from families, had you ever imagined that we would see something like that, and especially with the Customs and Border, especially at the border? Had you ever imagined that would happen?
No, that remains a stain that even those who implemented it during the Trump administration now recognize as a grave error. It's not consistent with who we are as a people, and it inflicted grave damage on migrant children in a way that's still, frankly, being repaired and addressed by the current administration.
Okay, and the Customs and Border Control agents themselves, that obviously it's a tough job. It's among the toughest jobs in law enforcement is to be a Customs and Border Control agent. Should they be on a rotation so to allow them breathing time, for instance? I'm hearing that agents that have been working consistently for a year or 2 years or sometimes even longer at places like Webb County right on the border, they suffer from sometimes mental breakdowns.
There's no question that the pressures on U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials, those who control the areas between our ports of entry, the green shirts or border patrol agents, and also at the ports of entry, the blue shirts that welcome us back and process the cargo into the United States, they need to be on the top of their games to get this done. But this is a problem in all employment sectors, and I think there are policies within USCBP, Customs and Border Protection, that address it. So your point is valid, but I think these are very good, professional, and tough people. And when burnout occurs, I think there are appropriate responses in the toolbox of the agency to deal with it.
And specifically, what are some of those tools in the toolbox when burnout does occur?
Reassignment, leaves of absence, and as necessary, discharge from service. These are human relations techniques that are not unique to CBP, but rather are applied as needed.
Okay. And what would you say to those that say that what we need to do is lend more assistance to Ecuador and Venezuela and countries where a lot of the migrants are coming from? Are you in agreement that we should lend more assistance to those countries to maybe help stop the flow of migration by keeping them there?
There's no question but that addressing root causes of the push factors, the natural disaster events, the war zone events that we've seen in Ukraine, the kind of repressive policies that drive people out of the northern triangle countries of Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras. These root causes are the push factors that get people on the move in a unprecedented at an unprecedented scale today. But these root cause solutions, while they need to be implemented, need to be done so strategically, and they need to recognize, Ed, that these are programs that require a generation to take effect. So when you look at traditionally at our southwest border in the 90s and before and into the 2000s, we saw largely migration from Mexico. Starting in 2017, we actually saw a decrease in Mexican migration, more people, more Mexicans leaving the United States legally and being deported than were actually entering illegally or legally. That was the result of the mass change in the Mexican economy that took place after the institution of NAFTA in the 1990s. Mexico is not the entirely poor, impoverished nation that many Americans still have in mind. While there are continuing inequalities there, to be sure, Mexico now has the 16th largest economy in the world, and almost 50% of Mexican society is middle class by any metric that you would apply. So yes, that's a development in Mexico that took a generation, 30 years or more, to actually be reflected in the migration statistics that we now see. Mexicans have been replaced for the most part, although they've been increasing recently because of worldwide economic conditions affecting Mexico. But we're seeing people from Central America because they're in the same position Mexicans were in 30 years ago. To correct that, and we do need to have strategic approaches to addressing, as I say, the root causes, they're not the short-term solution to deal with the flows that we're seeing today.
Right. You're accurately talking about a generational transformation, and I appreciate that. I appreciate the explanation there. This conversation and the solving of this problem is hard enough to sit at the table and solve this problem. How much more difficult does it make when you have, for instance, a Governor DeSantis and a Governor Abbott and those of those like them in these border states that are just doing cynical things like shipping off migrants to blue states? That doesn't help the conversation at all, and I'm sure it doesn't solve the problem.
No question, but this is not a new phenomenon. Because of the sensitivity of migration and border security concerns, we've seen the exploitation of border control concerns in every presidential election since the turn of the 21st century. And it will continue to afflict us in that way, absent the kind of comprehensive immigration reform that we almost got with the so-called Gang of Eight proposal in the beginning of the second Obama term. But that failed because of the refusal of then-Speaker Boehner, who was operating according to the so-called Hastert Republican caucus rule, to bring the matter to a vote It had been passed by the Senate, and many believe it would have been passed by the House had Republicans been free to vote their conscience and policy preference at that time. But this is all this is why this World Affairs Council event on Thursday is, I think, going to be a very good one and an exciting one. It addresses all of the issues you've raised, the global setting for migration today, in which, frankly, we're seeing more Venezuelans currently than any other group because of the repressive conditions in under the Maduro regime. But we'll also focus on Thursday on the southwest border and many of the issues you raised, but also look at the positive role of immigration in which the traditions and the importance of migration to U.S. society will be highlighted. And then lastly, we'll explore the consequences and the reasons for the inability to deal with comprehensive immigration reform at this time in our political history, including the high-end immigration legal pathways that we've discussed, as well as the DACA, the so-called Dreamer situation, where 800,000 individuals who were brought as children to the country were given a temporary status in this country. But these are young people where 75% of the American people approve of the DACA program to recognize the contributions that these young people make to our society. They've been in the United States since birth. They've been educated here, and they have taken their role in American society as workers, professionals, and citizens in ways that need to be given permanent status rather than leaving them in limbo, which is where they are currently under American law.
There are many of us, including my listeners among us, that are hoping that you, together with those like-minded, can breathe new life into immigration, true immigration reform here. The World Affairs Council, U.S. Immigration Trends, Realities, and Choices, takes place this coming Thursday, starting at 5:30 with a reception. There's a dinner in the main program, starts at 6:30. It's at the Avenue of the Arts in Costa Mesa at 3350 Avenue of the Arts. If you need information, ticket information, website, whatever, call me here at the radio station. Alan Burson, thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us today.
Not at all, Ed. See you on Thursday night.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you very much. 8:24 the time on the Mornings with Ed show.